Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project support group call. I'm so happy that you're all here with us this morning, and especially happy to have Dr. Danielle Beal, who is here super early from California and has so graciously agreed to be with us this morning to share her story and to give us some wonderful insights on gaining peace and working through trauma. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. As I mentioned, we have Dr. Danielle Beal here with us this morning to explore the topic of trauma, from trauma to triumph. Dr. Danielle Goitia Beal. Goitia Beal earned her doctoral degree in clinical psychology from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. Her dissertation is titled Trauma and Resiliency in Black American Women Began, How Trauma and Resiliency in Black American Women Began a Journey of Breaking Down the Stigma of Traumatic Events That Can Plague the Black Community. She earned her master's in teaching deaf and hard of hearing studies with an emphasis in ABA, which is applied behavior analysis, from National University, and her bachelor's in child development with an emphasis in communicative disorders from California State University, Long Beach. Dr. Beal contributed to an anthology titled She Nominal Women that became a number one bestseller. Simultaneously, she completed her pre- and postdoctoral internship supporting survivors of domestic violence, sexual abuse, and within the LGBTQIA2+ communities. Dr. Beal is a board-certified behavior analyst, trauma survivor, ABA agency owner, and has worked in some capacity of leadership for over 25 years. Currently, she supports children, families, and women who are underrepresented, providing educational and behavioral support to school districts in the protection of their Black and Brown student population. She trains community agencies on how to safely de-escalate sensitive members of the community who are in behavioral and mental health crises. Finally, Dr. Beal teaches school psychologists who want to become certified in applied behavior analysis and mentors professionals who have ethical violations through certification boards to support them in getting back into good standing. Dr. Beal is a highly regarded psychologist, behavior analyst who specializes in developmental disorders and trauma. She is considered a servant leader because she leads with compassion and unconditional regard for anyone who sits across from her. As a trauma survivor, Dr. Beal has overcome insurmountable odds that have formed her journey through healing, which she calls her heart work. And that's in quotes, heart work. She mentioned that this morning. You'll hear more about that in a moment. She understands that to truly begin to live a life of intention, one must get into the heart work of their own healing journey. This incorporates every aspect of a person's environment, and her approach to healing is comprehensive and multifaceted. Good morning, Dr. Beal, again. Thank you for being here with us. I'm so grateful for you getting up early today.
Good morning, Ms. Kelly. I am honored to be here, and I am thrilled to be able to share space with you and this audience. So thank you for having me, truly.
Yes, we really appreciate you and your sacrifice to get up, especially knowing that we both share in the fact that we don't sleep so well. So
yes,
breaking your sleep and sacrificing that to get up and be with us this morning is really special. We appreciate that. I want to start by asking a couple of questions. And as I just read to our village, your professional background is fascinating and it's so diverse and it's incredible. And your personal journey of being born into prison to a teenage mom is also fascinating. So I'd love to start there and have you explain or share your personal journey, how this work, how your heart work started, yeah. Because it often starts, you know, all of us are really creatures of our childhood.
Yes.
And so I'd love to start with you sharing your journey, your background and your journey.
Yeah. So, I guess, just forgive me as I navigate. I mentioned before the call that even though I've been talking about my story publicly for about 5 years, it still is an effort to be able to find the words to navigate. Mm-hmm. So just forgive me as I navigate. I am highly emotional. I am always, always, no matter what emotion is coming through, on the verge of tears. And that is just a natural part of how I exist. And I yes. have learned to accept it. So I just want to offer that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And it's okay. And this is a place where we cry often with yes. love. And it's okay.
Yeah. And I always say I've earned every single one of my tears. Yes. And I've learned to really just hold on to them and captivate the yes. big emotions that come up. So I guess my story started with my mom, who, her name is Gloria, and I will refer to her as Gloria. That's what I've called her throughout our lifetime. But she was 16 years old, ran away from home, and met my father, who was a grown married man with children. She was a worker in the streets, and but fell really deeply in love with my father. At 19, she became pregnant, and at that point had endured years of, and before I move into my story, I just want to offer, I know you're the space often talks about trauma. I just want to provide a trigger warning. We will talk about specific types of trauma. So just take care of your hearts as you consume the words that I'm about to share. But for 3 years, she had been a victim of his physical and very violent abuse. And one night they were in a parking lot, and he became especially violent, to the point where she had lost her teeth and she had lost her spleen in that altercation. And as a matter of self-defense, murdered him. There was a lot of chaos surrounding the event. She was taken to jail. She was 19. I was her first pregnancy. And she stayed there until I was some months old. I'm fuzzy on those details. She got out. I had stayed with one of her close friends and her close friend's mom until she was released. Shortly after, she met another man who had my little sister through rape. He raped her. My sister was born. And then a few years later, she met my stepdad, who produced another child, my little brother. And he sexually abused me and my sister for years. We were in and out of the foster care system as a result. And I just was angry. I was an angry little girl. I was an angry child. I had no voice that anyone protected or helped me navigate through all of the complexity of my experiences. Foster care was really traumatic. Being separated from my little sister was traumatic. When I was home, I was, adultified and really managed the household throughout my childhood. Fast forward, we moved to a different part of the state. And navigated that with some complexity, went to high school, met a woman, her son and I were friends. And immediately she took me in, and she said that one of the first questions she asked me was, "What are you doing with your life? Where are you going to school?" And at that point, I hadn't thought about my life beyond my service to my family, protecting my mom. My mom struggled with addiction her entire life. you know, I had my little sister and brother that I felt wholly responsible for. And so I hadn't thought about school in any capacity. I hadn't thought anything beyond the life that I was living. And I told her just that. She said, absolutely not. Let me tell you about HBCUs and this world and all the things that your life can be outside of this little city that we're currently living in. And so on my 18th birthday, she bought me a luggage set. She had been helping me fill out college applications. I got accepted into Long Beach State University. And she drove me down, packed me up, drove me down, dropped me off and said, do great. Right. And let me know of her sacrifice and what she had invested in me at that point. Within 3 months, I met a boy who told me I was pretty and ended up pregnant. Prior to the semester starting, I did a summer bridge program, which is an interim program before you get accepted into the university. So by the time the semester started and I was living in the dorms, had settled into the dorms, I was pregnant. Went through my entire first year of undergrad in the dorms, pregnant. And something shifted in me when I found out. I came home and I told Gloria that I was pregnant, and she said, her exact words were, "You're going to end up just like me." Something in that statement shifted everything. So up until that point, I didn't really have a purpose. I didn't have an understanding of what or how I needed to navigate my life. And the only
Gloria
thing
was your mother. Excuse me.
Was my mom. Up.
Gloria was your mother.
Yes.
Who had you from prison.
Yes. At
and
19.
When she was 19.
Yes.
And so when this, you were 18 in the summer bridge program, I'm just
19.
All
I was 19 too.
Mm-hmm. Same, but her perspective wasn't uplifting or helpful really.
No, nope.
It was very painful and harmful. It
yes.
sounds like.
Well, it was exactly, yes, painful and harmful, but exactly what I needed to hear to kind of change my perspective. I was in a relationship with that boy at the time who was moving into some potentially pretty significant abuse. He was psychologically abusive. He was emotionally abusive. My mom knew this immediately. And had been telling me, you know, like this is not a safe situation. And so she said exactly like, you are going to end up like me. If you do not, you know, get a different perspective. And up until that point, the only thing I knew in my life, because I didn't have much stability, I didn't have much security, I didn't have much insight or direction. It was me just flailing through my experience. I didn't have any sort of anything until, the only thing I understood about my circumstance was that I had to do the exact opposite of anything Gloria was doing. And so when she said this, I just, something, and I still remember the feeling, this deep sense of protection for my child. And so I navigated the pregnancy in the dorms, in the relationship with caution, but also feeling like I have to make this relationship work because my mom's relationship with my dad didn't work. And so that was my buffer. And I have to get through college, which I was just embarking on. Fast forward, we move in together at the end of that year. That was horrific. I won't go into the details of that. That's a whole other like complicated Lifetime movie. But shortly after my mom passed away, complications due to her struggle with addiction, and I adopted my 11-year-old brother, and I had to bring him down to Long Beach. And that was just a whole kind of thing that I had to navigate at now 20. I had a new baby and now my brother, and I was just in survival mode. And at that point, it was like the only thing that like I can focus on is getting through college. Well, it took me 7 years to get through undergrad. And I struggled. And I thought I struggled because, you know, I had fought homelessness at some point and two children, and all my friends were out partying, and here I am, you know, surviving. Somewhere along that journey, someone recommended that I seek therapy. And my first therapist was a dignified and beautiful clinical psychologist who helped me move through the process of grieving the loss of my mother. And it wasn't a loss that I felt impacted by, like I lost my mom. There was so much anger attached and carrying the full responsibility of my brother at such a young age. And so for 7 years of my college, undergrad college experience, I was just navigating intense rage and anger and frustration over my circumstance, and separating from the abusive effects of the relationship that I was in, and all the things. So there's that. And again, long, complicated story. And
I would love to just ask a quick question before you move on.
Yes, please. Sorry, please.
No, please don't be sorry. This is really helpful. And a thank you for sharing and being so honest and vulnerable, because it's hard to be vulnerable. So you were 20, taking care of your baby, your own baby, and then you adopted your brother.
Yes.
And you mentioned navigating rage. And the reason I wanted to pause and ask a question about that part is because I relate to that, and very differently, but I relate to having a child, and something had happened, and I was so angry that anger, I never talked about it until right now. I shared it with Dr. Vicky earlier. I was so angry, but a lot of the anger, I think, I placed on my son.
Yes.
Who's the reason that Sunrise was born, you know, years later. But that pain and that anger, and that I was really angry about something that had happened right before I had. And I look back and I've never gotten over that, if I'm really honest with myself. But that pain and that anger sometimes came out, and in ways that I never hit him, never, you know, but it was emotionally not right. Yes. I'm just now pausing. I wanted to mention that because I needed to say that. But I also wanted to ask you, did your intense rage, that's the word you used, did your intense rage ever come out towards your children? Mm-hmm. And how did it manifest? How did that look? If you're comfortable sharing.
I am. My baby is now a beautiful, and here come the tears. My baby is now a beautiful 26-year-old woman who is out in this world. And she's my best friend. I am her best friend. We have such a beautiful relationship. And the thing I'm most proud about with Alexia is her ability to navigate the complexity of her life and our life together. I am so proud of the hard work she's doing. Her father, she's navigating a really difficult relationship with. As I was navigating my own stuff, she was often the brunt of it. And the way that it manifested was, I am under so much pressure to just create a life different than what I lived. Like, I am in fierce protection. I need you. Like, I'm out here doing all this stuff. I need you to be perfect in every way. And when she wasn't, and when she created, just as a child, any additional stress for me, it came out in the expectations that I set for her. And I see it manifest in her now as an adult, and I'm still working through forgiving myself, right? And raising her under those conditions. One of the things that I'm most grateful for in our relationship is the grace that she offers me, and realizing that I was learning and that I was growing with her, and that we had to navigate all of my mistakes together. And one of the things that she's so gracious about is that I knew every time I harmed her emotionally, physically, mentally, that I would repair that. I would apologize to her, and we would work through together being better for each other. And as an adult, she's able to fully talk to me and articulate forgiveness and grace for our lived experiences together. So that's how it manifests. And
that's beautiful that you've gotten to that place. You know,
yes,
I mean, it's beautiful. Yes. I have not gotten there with my 21-year-old. We sent him away 3 times, massively traumatic, massively. And my mother always says, can't get the time back. But boy, I sure wish I could, because we sent him away. There was nothing wrong with him. He was just in so much crisis and pain because we wouldn't listen to him.
Yeah.
That he started smoking weed and started acting out and all the things. But really, we were the problem. He wasn't the problem. So putting him into all that trauma at such an early age, I know we have not gone through that. Even though I've apologized, I don't believe he's in the same space as your daughter. So I want to keep going, but I just thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no, it's your my story. Pleasure. People ask all the time, people who knew me then, people who know us now, are always so appreciative that they get to witness our journey together. I mean, I always say Alexia is my soulmate. And a part of what, you know, they ask me all the time, how did you get here? And really, I think being vulnerable with her, right? Like I never, ever said I was perfect. I'm actually the exact opposite. And I've always been open about being able to identify, like I'm learning, I'm figuring this out, just because I have this title in my personal life and my professional life doesn't mean that I like ever have hit actualization. Like I am in this continual process of learning, and you get to give me feedback. Anyone who shares space with me gets to give me feedback. And I think that's one of the things that has really allowed her to move into a space of her own exploration. And she gets to say, you hurt me, mom. And I get to say, I know. And how do we move through that? And how do I create safety for you? How do we repair that? And how do I create safety? And so any kind of advice that I have is learning how to get vulnerable with yourself and understanding the potential harm, being open to feedback, and then being open to that repair process, and investing.
Forgiving ourselves. Absolutely. And that starts with forgiving ourselves, not having guilt, because we're doing the best we can, have done the best we can. But I think what you said about the apology, and I'm not sure why my dog is having a meltdown now. But the apologizing and just sitting in the apology.
Yeah.
And what you said secondarily was, and let's move through this together. Doesn't have to have all the answers, but let's work through it together. That's beautiful. Yeah. Really beautiful.
Yeah. I want to share this too, if I can, real quick. Please. My baby, all of our birthdays are in June. So I'm in June. I have my 26-year-old. She just turned 26. I have an 8-year-old who just turned 8, and my oldest daughter's father is also in June. So it's just a big month. We have Juneteenth and we have Father's Day and we have Pride celebration. And so June, I have learned to embrace as a time of like deep reflection and gratitude for our journeys in another year. And so my baby went to dinner with her dad. And again, she's struggling to navigate that relationship. And she said she was so hyper vigilant during the dinner, and she was like white knuckling it through. And she got to her car and she broke down, and she's like, I can't sit in a space with my dad and his mom and his wife and his daughter. He also had a baby after she had gone to college. And so she has two little baby sisters. And she's like, I couldn't sit through it. And she was like, and I was so upset that all I could do was cry. And in my own rage, I texted him and was like, what did you do to protect me from the chaos of this family? And what are you doing to protect my little sister from enduring the same things that I did? And she said it took him a couple days to respond. But when he did, he was like, it's my mom and it's not me. And she felt again this rage, and that like he wouldn't just say like I failed you or and she was like, and I realized in that moment that is what I need. I just need acknowledgement. And I think oftentimes our babies need to know that from us, right? From their parents is the acknowledgement that I failed you or I harmed you, or, and then the ability and capacity to move through in a space that's safe for them to rectify and repair. And so I wanted to offer that as an example of her being able to feel a feeling and then tact her navigating that and identifying the barrier that comes up for her from having a meaningful relationship with her father.
Yeah. And do you find that often women are able to get to the place of acknowledgement sooner than men? I wonder about that. I have no data to support that at all. But I, having talked to many people that have talked about the mother and child relationship, working through, working through the relationship, starting with acknowledging and apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen many men not do that, the parent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the ingredient is vulnerability, right? I think that might be the ingredient that's missing. And if we're talking about those gender roles and all the stuff, especially with Black men and women, this is a deep passion that I've explored. There's so much that stigma that you were talking about at the beginning of the show, shrouds us. And I think vulnerability is at the core of that, because when we expose our vulnerability, then we expose potential weakness and we open ourselves up for harm that maybe we don't have the capacity to endure. And so I think that might be the barrier that comes up, especially when we're navigating our children and we are in that power kind of position over them.
I love that. So I have a thousand more questions, but let
yes,
me ask
please.
You, you've shared a story about a bird on social media. Would you share that story of the bird?
Yes. So I always felt like, even as a child, a bird with a broken wing. I have articulation issues. I used to stutter. I had a severe speech impediment. I had learning challenges. And when I was young, I would tell people, like, I was being hurt. I would tell my mom or people in my household, I'm being hurt. And no one listened to me. And that came out in my behaviors at school. I would have tantrums, and I would get to the point where it's like, hi, I was this little frail little thing. And I have a picture of myself that I keep. And I want to protect little Danielle. And I would be like, I'm being hurt, or I need help. And the adults around me were just too busy in their own, now I understand, trauma to stop and create a safe pathway for me. And then it got to a point where, like, I always say my nickname is Digga, and then Digga would come out, and Digga was like angry, and she would be the one like, you didn't hear little Danielle, Digga's now coming, and she's flipping a table and she's pulling her hair and she's screaming. And so I always, like, who I am to my core is this bird with a broken wing, but Digga was kind of birthed in my healing journey. And Digga's like pushing Danielle, little Danielle, out of open windows. And together we're flying and we're figuring stuff out and we're surviving. And so that little bird, I will always, always, always see myself as a bird with a broken wing, right? I can't do this. I'm harmed, and I have been harmed, and that's my trauma. But Digga has created a healing framework where I've learned over the course of now 30 years of my healing journey that I can fly with that broken wing, that it doesn't incapacitate me, that it actually gives me a strength and a resilience that I have now learned can be a motivator for other Black women who have had the significant amount of trouble that I've had, or even less in any capacity, that they can too take a step forward and learn how to navigate their healing journey with grace and love and compassion for themselves.
I love that. It's what you just said, we can fly, learning to fly with the broken wing.
With a broken wing.
Mm-hmm. That's such a beautiful
story. That's exactly it.
Story. And your journey is beautiful. And you actually spend so much time advocating for others.
Yes.
Around in this space of trauma and healing. Well, let's talk about how that started and why you do that work.
Yeah. So Dr. Ash, my first therapist, helped me navigate grief. And then I'm married to my high school sweetheart, and he's a big part of my story. We met in high school. And then I went to college, had a baby. We broke up. We got back together a year later. His mom died on the same day, a year before my mom died. And so that is what reconnected us. But that relationship was really seeped in a lot of trauma as well. We did not know how to effectively be partnered. And that caused a lot of emotional pain for both of us. And so I continued my therapeutic journey as I navigated a relationship with him for many years. Simultaneously, I had started working in the field of behavior analysis, where I was serving. So I knew I wanted to work with children. As a child, I was like, I just want to protect children in a way that I wasn't protected. And so I knew that, but I didn't know what that looked like. And so I found behavior analysis, fell in love working with an autistic child, and was really good at it. It was not attached to my own trauma, right? Like I wasn't working with foster youth or children who were being harmed. So that felt safe. And I was really good at it. I discovered very early on, within 2 weeks of me doing my first job, I loved it. I also found that there weren't a lot of clinicians that were Black like me. And so I gravitated towards Black and Brown families and found that I was doing things differently than the science, had kind of outlined. I was navigating my own path and found that I was a really significant resource to Black and Brown families. So because I loved my job and because it was paying my bills and it was a matter of survival, I accidentally went back and got my master's because I needed a master's degree to keep the level of work that I had been doing. I fell in love with the deaf and hard of hearing community. So I became a sign language interpreter as a hustle, as another, matter of survival. And just found that my gift wasn't in the labor itself, that my gift was in service, right, of other people, service of the children. I held in my space, service to their parents who were navigating diagnosis. And looking back, I realized that that was my superpower. It was my empathic nature. It was my ability to sit with a grieving parent, right? Because I navigated my own grief as they were coming to terms with their child with this diagnosis, right? And it wasn't just about the science and the therapeutic kind of nature of what we were doing. It was really, I was sitting in spaces and thinking about the entire family and how their family was impacted by their community and how that community was impacted, right, by these larger systems. And so I was in the trench work, providing service, community, love, and compassion in a way that my colleagues weren't. And that became a part of my own healing journey. Mm-hmm. Every time I sat in a space with the family and navigated their own stuff, I was being reinforced and I was navigating my own healing. And that gave me a purpose and a drive and a resilience to endure some of the stressors that I was experiencing. They were showing me love in a way that I hadn't received in my own family. And this just perpetuated the intensity of what I was doing. Fast forward a few years forward, I had seen the disparities between children, Black and Brown children specifically, receiving a diagnosis and the time it was taking for them to receive treatment. And so at some point I was like, I want to go back to school so that I can start diagnosing. I opened up my own agency so that I could employ Black and Brown clinicians, because I wasn't being protected in my own, as I was navigating my own adverse workplace experiences. I wanted to offer that for Black and Brown clinicians. And so I was like, let me go back to school and offer this as a resource so that I can eliminate the gap or shorten the gap between diagnosis and treatment of these children and families. And so that's what I did in 2018. But in the midst of that, we had the COVID and the pandemic. More specifically, we had the murder of George Floyd. And as I was listening to the rhetoric that I was seeing, because suddenly we're all at home, we have nothing to do. And like so many of us, I was outraged. But I also learned that I had never really talked about my racial experiences and my traumatic experiences. Simultaneously, I was writing a dissertation about my experience as a Black woman. I had invited 10 women to share their stories, their bravery, and being able to talk to me about their experiences without shame, without guilt, really modeled for me that I could probably talk about mine too, and that it would probably be cathartic. Simultaneously, I went back to work for the shelter that my mom accessed as a resource when she was in the midst of her domestic struggle and abuse. And I was asked to write my story about overcoming obstacles in my life. And this was just a perfect, I think this was God.
Had
absolutely culminated so many of my experiences into this moment where he really, I feel like, pushed me out of an open window with my very broken wing and said, talk. And I did. Mm-hmm. And my book became a bestseller. And I did a podcast that was downloaded like millions of times. And it just released, I think, a deeper sense of purpose in this work and how I want to show up, how the legacy I want to leave for my girls and for other Black women as, again, they're navigating their own stuff. And I finally, after 46 years of being on this earth, have been able to define that as heart work. Service to myself first, service to my girls, and then service to my community. So
fantastic. To self, your girls, and the community. Your shirt's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes. I love that. It's so interesting. We have several pieces of our journeys are very similar for another conversation another time. But I love that. And someone just wrote what you said, pushed me out of a window with a broken wing, yet you can fly. It taught you to fly, but you can fly even with a broken wing. I think that's powerful. And so, and you shared, so heart work is service to myself, service to my girls, and service to my community. Right? Is that okay? I love that. You're doing incredible work. It's God's work. And what a blessing to us and to the world. And appreciate you. I want to open up the floor for people to ask questions. And while we're doing that, I do want to ask one other question about listening. We touched on this earlier a little bit. I shared a little of my story too about not really listening. But if you think about your parenting journey and how you grew up and all of that you've been through, that one big theme around acknowledging and also listening, I feel like those are the two biggest themes we've heard today. I want to ask you about how can we really support our children and listen to them without absolving our parental responsibility. It's a real fine line.
I think probably vulnerability is at the core of that. And vulnerability, I think, is an invisible strength that I do not think we make room enough for. And so to be vulnerable, we have to let go of our egos, which is an incredibly hard thing to do. But one of the things that I think motivated me in my journey was because my mom died and I have had to navigate life, more of my life without her than I did with her, I really idolize the relationship that we could have had, right? Like my grief isn't about her. It's about the life that I could have had. Like I'm 46 years old and I desperately still need a mom. I need to be hugged tonight. I need to be protected. And so that was my motivation for creating the relationships with my girls, right? Is I want them to, no matter what, know that they have a mama that will like love them unconditionally. And so I think that's at the root of being able to sit in a space and just listen, right? My investment isn't in me. It is at its core, but it's really in Alexia and Skylar. I want them to be able to do whatever they want to do and know that they can make a mistake and come home and I will navigate through that. And so that takes a strength in me to let go of my own stuff, recognize when it's coming up in my relationship with them, work on my stuff with my therapist, because I still have a therapist and I still, you know, need guidance and support. But I think that's at the crux of being able to sit in a space and letting go and really being able to like weed out what's mine, what's theirs, what's ours that we share, what's interfering, what do I need support in, right? But I think vulnerability is at the center of being able to navigate all those moving parts.
I agree. Vulnerability and listening, both. But really, that vulnerability is at the heart. I hear that and so agree with you. So agree with you. So I want to open the floor. If you are on your phone, you can hit *6 to come off of mute. Or if you'd like to, if you're on your computer or on your phone on Zoom, you can also come off of Zoom. And I would love to have a question, comment, thought, if you're interested in sharing with Dr. Danielle this morning. Any questions?
Hi, Kelly. This is Vicky.
Good morning. Have a question.
Good morning, Dr. Danielle Bill.
Good morning.
This has been amazing. I just want to acknowledge for you, and I'm sure everyone saw it, how as you were sharing your story, the sun was coming up.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
That's right.
To me. You got up and closed the blinds, but before you did that, it was as if we were watching the sun rising as you were sharing your story. And in that same way is how your light is just so beautiful and so powerful, and your vulnerability is what gives the rest of us permission to be the same. So I just want to say thank you for sharing so transparently and modeling a way, you know, that I can even connect with my daughter who is resistant to vulnerability because I was.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Vicky.
Yeah.
In 2020, when all that stuff happened, I didn't realize the power. I've always been like this, and I've always been punished for it. I've always, you know, like, you're too sensitive, or on the other end, you know, when I'm experiencing this rage, like, you're too. And something shifted in me where I gave myself permission to just be. I'm not apologizing. I'm not going to diminish myself to make anyone feel comfortable, you know, more comfortable. I'm going to just be who I am, and the spaces that are safe will allow that, and the spaces that aren't won't. And I trust myself to know how to navigate that. The light coming in and the sunshine, I've learned that, again, my superpower, and I really believe that God has culminated all the moving parts of my life. I mean, there's so much of my story that we haven't even touched on. This is the public part, but that sunshine coming in is the confirmation, is an example of a confirmation that I get continually. And I believe with all of my heart that it's God literally just confirming and stamping, this is what you were put on this earth to do. Because in my childhood, I used to like scream out, like, in agony, like, why me, right? Like, as I was navigating homelessness and all of like, why me? And now I'm so thankful that God chose me to be a conduit of this heart work and this service. And so thank you for acknowledging that. And thank you for acknowledging the strength that I've had to learn to be vulnerable publicly.
Yeah, it is a strength. It's very much a strength. And I know in my own parenting with my daughter, my focus was, I'm going to control variables, right? So she doesn't make the same mistakes that I make. Baby, when I tell you that, like, backfired. So
they're going to make mistakes, and you've got to make a choice about how you're going to, right, like, share that space with them. And so, yeah, like, you cannot control. These are grown, like, people out in this world, and you cannot control those variables. And
yeah, so
I
just
had to
thank
learn
you.
That. Yeah.
Huge, huge thank you. I'm going to stop now in case somebody else has a question, but this has just been so beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. There was another person that I agree with you. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. There was another person that had come off of mute for a second. I don't know if you still want to speak. I think it was Nicole.
Oh, thank you. I was just wanting to say thank you. I just appreciate you all pausing your morning this morning to share your personal stories that are also healing to us. So I appreciate all of you. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. And I thank you as well, Dr. Danielle. Vulnerability, and that word is so powerful. And it allows you to connect with people. And then they say, I'm not alone. There are other people like me. And I've gone through this. And I can share, and I can be open. And then once you start becoming open and sharing, the healing starts slowly.
Yes. Yes.
But it starts with being open and being vulnerable. I really believe that.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Of course. Thank you for sharing space with me.
Oh, of course. Is there anyone else that wants to share, or maybe share what you might be going through this morning that you might want to get off your heart or get some thoughts on?
I wanted to share, and what you said about being a child and having your emotions silenced, your sadness, your anger, that resonated with me. I went through the same thing, and I had to learn
to be able to accept those feelings. And now I have a child who's also a deeply feeling person. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get her to hold that space for herself.
Yes.
Let her understand that I know it's a struggle, but it's also her superpower.
Yes.
Because she feels sadness deeper than most people and anger, but also her joy is bigger than most people.
Yes.
So she just has to understand both sides of that. And I love hearing how your relationship with your daughter has healed. My daughter's only 9. And I'll say that I started struggling when she was about 3.
Yes.
And we went through about 2 years before I was able to understand and kind of reframe that this is not a problem, but something that she's struggling with that I need to support her in and not live in a space of fear. Because I did have this fear of what's going to happen if, what's this going to look like later? And everything was in fear and panic.
Yep.
And I'm past that now, but I just feel terrible thinking about little 3 and 4 year old her who needed me to support her and hold space for her. And I was just trying to battle what felt uncomfortable for me. And I hope to see that healing as we go through the journey. And I've apologized and I'm there and I'm supportive, but I still see the remnants of what she went through with me before, and I understand it. And I beat myself up about it. And if there's one thing in life I could change, it would be to be a different person then, but I can't change that. So
yeah.
I hope that as we grow, that she is able to hold that space for me, and that we can be close, and that she can forgive me at some point for that. So thank you for sharing the story.
Of course. Is it Brianna?
It is Brianna.
Brianna. I will share my 8-year-old is, so I always say Alexia, my 26-year-old is like me as an adult. She's Digga, but little Skylar is little Danielle. And I resonate deeply. When she was about 2 or 3, I started to struggle with her, and I would have these intense, like, outbursts with her. And I did not know how to engage with her. And then I went to my very blackety black therapist, realized that she is me as a little girl. And the only way I knew how to respond to her was the way Gloria, that realization, everything in me knew logically, right? And so coming face to face with a child who literally, she looks like me, she wears glasses, she has, like, this is how I looked when I was a little girl. And so I've had to learn how to navigate. Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay? Am I breaking up?
It's coming in and out. So we heard you just now say you had to learn how to navigate, but it pauses every few words, but you're here now. Mm-hmm.
So I had to interact with her.
You paused a little bit, sort of hit or miss there. After Danielle, we heard, I think, most of what you said, talking about your 8-year-old. There's a pause now, and I'm not sure what's going on. So when you start speaking, it pauses a little bit. But you're here now. So thank you for that. And you're typing it in the notes. So you said, I'm having to learn how to navigate a healthier relationship with her without harming her. Yes, that's a summary of what you shared. So thank you for that. I'm so appreciative of you this morning for being here, for being so open, for sharing your journey. And overwhelmed with joy and opportunities for improvement in my relationships with my children and with myself. So I appreciate you. Thank you for being here and getting up so early, truly with the sunrise. So there's a lot of meaning behind that word, as we talked a little bit earlier about, but we appreciate you being here and would love to have you back at some point in the future to explore some of those other areas that we didn't get into today. But really, thank you, thank you, thank you. And Dr. Vicky will close us out with a prayer this morning. Thank you again.
Yes, God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us. Thank you for Dr. Danielle Beal and her journey of turning her pain into her purpose and power, and her trauma into triumph. and a demonstration for all of us of what's possible. We thank you because the wounds are where the light enters. And we thank you for the visual today of watching literally the sunrise as we here on the Sunrise Project endeavor to heal together individually and as a community. Bless us as we go forward. Continue to elevate, expand, and evolve Dr. Danielle's work and her impact and her influence. Thank you for the legacy that she has created. Thank you for positioning her to break generational barriers and obstacles and curses in her bloodline, and that her daughters now get to walk in generational blessings. We appreciate just who she is as an expression of you and the earth. Bless her family. Bless Kelly and her family. Bless us as we go into the rest of our day, remembering that weeping may endure for a night, but joy always comes in the morning. We give you glory for all of these things. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you again, Dr. Danielle.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Enjoy your Sundays. Be well.
Yes. Thank you so much. And be well, everybody. And thank you really, really from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Have a beautiful day and a beautiful week. And we will be back next Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern. Enjoy the day. Thank you, everyone.